Hello, I'm Rabbi Iggy, and welcome to Tattoos and Torah. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tattoos and Torah. Thank you for joining me. I'm Rabbi Iggy, out of the Tshuva Center. Today, I want to talk about the soul. I'm reminded of an article that I read a while ago in the LA Times, and it posed a question for me. Self-centered or centered self? Here's the story. I'm going to read some of it from the article and some of it I'll fill in. From the article, 5 years ago, she was Anne Russell Miller, a dynamic San Francisco socialite with season tickets to the opera, a propensity for silk parasols, and a knack for raising money for charity. Now, she is Sister Mary Joseph of the Trinity. She prays in silence behind a lattice of black iron bars that will keep her in seclusion and poverty for the rest of her life, away from her 10 children, 19 grandchildren, and an inherited fortune. She sleeps on a wooden plank bed covered by a thin mattress in a small, barren cell. She is allowed to talk with her fellow nuns during 2 designated hours a day. She is permitted 1 visitor a month, but even then, she must sit behind the double set of bars. By all accounts, she is happy. How did this happen? Why did this vivacious woman turn her life upside down, giving away material riches for poverty? Her friends and family wonder, and wonder some more. The answer, it seems, is a mystery of faith. I'm skipping a little bit, and it continues. At 19, she married Richard Miller, who became vice president of the Pacific Gas and Electric, a utility company that once was a family business. Together, they made a vow. The person who survived the other would dedicate his or her life to God. Anne and Richard had it all. Old money, celebrity friends, and a 9-bedroom mansion overlooking the San Francisco Bay. He was a chairman of the San Francisco Opera Association. She raised money for gifted college students, the homeless, and the Roman Catholic Church. At one point, she was a member of 22 boards. I'm skipping again. In October 1989, on the eve of her induction into the monastery, she invited hundreds of her friends to a mass at St. Mary's Cathedral, where the Archbishop of San Francisco officiated. Afterwards, she threw a black tie gala in the grand ballroom of the Hilton Hotel, inviting 800 guests. It was her 61st birthday. The first 2/3 of my life were devoted to the world. The last 1/3 will be devoted to my soul, she told her teary-eyed friends that night. I can do more for you by praying than any other way, she told one friend. The story continues, but this story sparked some debate in my household. Is she tending to her soul, or is she being selfish? Is a life of solitude nourishing to the soul? Or should one always take action for others, be part of community, their families? I don't have the answers for everyone, of course. But I will say that some people nourish the soul by outward action, by being involved in the world. But some do so by retreating inwards, and exploring the majesty of the world within, exploring the world that the soul gives in, going inwards for the vastness of the inside, contemplative, poor, recluse life. Or, as William Blake puts it, perhaps, to see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wildflower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. So, what is it? What is the soul? In Hebrew, the term for soul, nefesh, literally meaning living being, also sometimes known as ruach, meaning wind sometimes, neshama, of course, meaning breath. Chaya or chayut, right? Also life is part of what we define as the soul. And it is written in our tradition that God gave people a soul in Genesis, right? So Genesis 2, and the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living being. We also learn in a midrash in Bereshit Rabbah that soul, right, by five names is the soul, nefesh called. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida, unique thing. Nefesh, this is the blood, the text says. Ruach, for she rises and falls. As in, who knows if the ruach of a human being goes upwards. Neshama, this is the visage, the character, the shape, the uniqueness of a thing. And chaya, right, that all the limbs die, the living body, the soul, she lives in the body, not like the limbs. And then that all the limbs are two by two, but the soul is a singular in the body. So, right, so the Midrash allows us to sort of think about the soul within the living of the body, and we'll touch on that in a little bit as well. Maimonides talks about the soul and about sort of hurting the soul and repairing the soul. So he writes this: know that the human soul is one, but it has many diversified activities. Some of these activities have indeed been called souls, which has given rise to the opinion that man has many souls, as was the belief of the physicians. With the result that the most distinguished of them states in the introduction of his book, Maimonides, that there are three souls: the physical, the vital, and the psychical. These activities are called faculties and parts, so that the phrase part of the soul, frequently employed by philosophers, is commonly used. By the word parts, however, we do not intend to imply that the soul is divided into parts as our bodies, but they merely enumerate the different activities of the soul as being parts of a whole, the union of which makes up a soul. He also writes, thou knowest that the improvement of the moral qualities is brought about by healing of the soul and its activities. Therefore, just as the physician who endeavors to cure the human body must have a perfect knowledge of it in its entirety and its individual parts, just as he must know what causes sickness, that it may be avoided, and must also be acquainted with the means by which a patient may be cured, so, likewise, he who tries to cure the soul, wishing to improve the moral qualities, must have a knowledge of the soul in its totality and its parts, must know how to prevent it from becoming disease, and how to maintain its health. So you can see part of what I'm trying to sort of get to, and the ideas that we'll discuss are not just what is the soul, but also how do we nourish the soul? How do we find a space to hear the soul, to try and understand what is the soul within me, and how do I feed the soul in a way that is beneficial? And one of the pieces of Talmud that is some of my favorites comes from Sanhedrin and points out to some of the things that both Maimonides and what we're talking about points to, which is sort of the body and the soul and the tension between the physical body, of course, and the soul. So the story in Sanhedrin says, Antoninus, the Roman emperor, said to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi Judah the patriarch, the body and the soul are able to exempt themselves from judgment for their sins. How so? The body says, the soul sinned, as from the day of my death, when it departed from me, I am cast like a silent stone in the grave, and do not sin. And the soul says, the body sinned, As from the day that it departed from me, I am flying in the air like a bird, incapable of sinning. Rabbi Yehuda said to him, I will tell you a parable. To what is this matter comparable? It is comparable to a king of flesh and blood who had a fine orchard, and in it there were fine first fruits of a fig tree. And he stationed two guards at the orchard, one lame, who was unable to walk, and one blind. Neither was capable of reaching the fruit on the trees in the orchard without the assistance of the other. The lame person said to the blind person, I see the fine first fruits of a fig tree in the orchard. Come and place me upon your shoulders. I will guide you to the tree, and we will bring the figs to eat them. The lame person rode upon the shoulders of the blind person, and they brought the figs and ate them. Sometimes later, the owner of the orchard came to the orchard. He said to the guard, the fine first fruit of the fig tree that were here in the orchard, where are they? The lame person said, do I have any legs with which I would be able to walk and take the figs? The blind person said, do I have any eyes with which I would be able to see the way to the figs? What did the owner of the orchard do? He placed the lame person upon the shoulders of the blind person, just as they did when they stole the figs, and he judged them as one. So this story, this idea of the soul and the body, here in this idea of sinning, of missing the mark, where does the animation reside, right? Where does our soul reside? You see, I believe that the soul, for me, of course, is the animating force behind all that we do. It is the uniqueness of who we are as we interpret what we see and what we experience, but also as we take action as sovereign self. Our soul is a voice inside us that guides us as we go about our lives. It can be diminished or increased. It can be small and insignificant for some people. And for some, perhaps, like the person we just read about, it is loud and clear. So in this story and this ideas of the soul, thinking about what is it, where is the animation of it? In the Talmud, it's a question of sin, but in a more positive world, the way we look at it, the way I look at it, this question of where does our self reside? It's a real question. Pierre Teilhard de Chardin said, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. So I'm not sure if you agree with that. I don't know that I agree with that. But this idea of trying to figure out how do we nourish our soul? Is it by outwards? Is it going inwards? What are these ideas that sort of we have to consider as we're thinking about it? For Anne Russell Miller, right, Sister Mary Joseph of the Trinity, for her it was inwards. But I don't know that that's true for every single one of us. And part of the question is to understand, where does our uniqueness reside? And then what do we do with it? Perhaps we have to consider how we nourish our soul. Different tools, techniques, ideas on how do we even listen to ourselves. How do we listen to our soul? And as always, and I've spoken about this before, silence is a key tool. It is an ancient practice of creating the space to listen to the soul. Hidbodedut, some call it in Hebrew. When we practice it, we have to make space to listen so that we can observe. So create a space where you can be by yourself, when you can create silence. And allow yourself to listen. And you have to do it a few times. And at some point, perhaps, you can start hearing this familiar voice, an inside voice. you know that it is your inner truth, it is your voice, the voice of the soul, if it wants you to find meaning, if it wants you to find joy, if it wants you to be content, if it considers you to be the ultimate element of your own satisfaction and your own life, your own recovery, perhaps even your own happiness. That is the voice of the soul to start with. And it can be very small at the beginning. But the more space you create for it, the more times you can go back to that space, the stronger that sound, that voice, that feeling will become. Other ways, for me, for example, is immersing yourself in music or art, something that inspires you. For me, I put on Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake when I need to go inwards sometimes. And I feel the embrace of the music. I lose myself to the music a little bit. It inspires me. It soothes me. And it allows me to refine myself or redefine myself. See, I've heard this piece of music thousands of times, if not more. And coming back to it allows me to bring more awareness to where I am now versus perhaps when the last time I heard it. And it nourishes me. It allows me to find myself within something that I like and makes me feel good. Of course, as always, being of service. When students were told to perform 5 acts of kindness a week over 6 weeks, their well-being increased compared to a control group, according to a study overseen by the University of California, Riverside, psychology professor Sonia Lyubomirsky, and she's the author of The How of Happiness. In that study, the biggest increase was seen by those who performed the 5 acts in one day instead of spreading it over time. A study elsewhere found, of course, that empathy towards strangers also triggers a release of oxytocin and subsequent generosity. So being of service, finding ways to be of service to others, acts of kindness, volunteering, nourishes the soul, nourishes that inner voice, that space that sort of says, I want to do something that's good for myself and for the world. Another one, which is sort of related to sort of nature, but for me, the example of it, and you can extrapolate, I read it somewhere, go have lunch in the sunlight. Don't have lunch indoors. So head outdoors to like a park or a bench somewhere, even just outside, having your sandwich outside, right? To be aware that the sunlight and the exposure to it is a daily bodily and soul need. Remind yourself there as well about the connection between the body and the soul, right? Because they do come together. They're a package deal at this point for most of us, most of you who are listening to the podcast. Although if you are just a soul ghost listening to the podcast, I'm welcome you as well. And this being in the sun strengthened the body and the soul through this idea of taking yourself out to the sun, to some kind of space in nature that, again, makes you feel good, makes you get inspired, and connects you to the earth and where you are. Another way to strengthen the soul, to nourish the soul, is, of course, to strengthen the body and soul through movement or exercise. Allow yourself to find a practice that makes you move, one that makes you sweat, focus, heal. And it could be gym, yoga, running, whatever it is. But feeling the ups and downs of challenges and respite, right? Feeling the ebb and flow, right? Much like your soul, your body needs to feel this ebb and flow of life, right? Looking at limits of our existence, but also challenges, but also overcoming those. The up and down, the exhaustion, the ramping up, the ramping down, the cooling down, all these are incredibly important for nourishing the soul, again, because it creates that connection between the container that we live in and the inner voice inside. Forgiving someone, for example. I've spoken before, of course, about the the nightly prayer that is part of our journaling system, and the importance of forgiving oneself and others. But even research, of course, found that study participants who forgave were later able to perform better, physically even. But more importantly, it allows our soul to cleanse itself. A Washington assistant professor of management, Ryan Fair, says that forgiveness might help people retain more energy, carry less stress, and even perform better at work. Forgiving somebody, in that sense, we know from our tradition, allows us to exercise something that our soul gives us, which is the ability to let go, forgive, find some gratitude in our ability to do that. Of course, as always, journaling is a big part of this and the ability to reflect. These are just a few ideas on how to nourish the soul. And there's many more, and you're welcome, as always, to contact us and I'm happy to talk about more of these. Lastly, as I sign off, I want to think about this verse in the Bible, Ner Adonai Nishmat Adam. The candle, the light of God, the lamp of God, is the soul, the life breath of man. The lamp of God is the life breath or the soul of man. So the soul perhaps maybe is the candle that lights up the darkness of existence. The soul perhaps is not just the animating force of who we are, but also that light that keeps the darkness always away. So sometimes the flame can be small and it needs to be kindled more, and sometimes the flame is high, and we feel this in people. Our soul is that lamp that allows us to always understand that we can be safe, and therefore we have to find ways to make sure that the flame is big, but also that it's always there, and to go inwards. When we say the Shema in traditional settings, we cover our eyes to refine that darkness and that inner world, but also to focus on that flame, that candle. And in our tradition, it is the lamp of God, in fact. It stops us from the solitude, and perhaps even God's solitude, because he is just one and his own existence has solitude. Thank you for listening, and thank you for going this journey with thinking about the soul. I'm curious to hear what you think. You can always find us, you know how. This podcast was recorded by Tshuva Center. I want to thank our team, Ben Lichman, Grace Sheed, and Sadie Baker-Wax, who make this all possible and make sure that the guests and I sound as best we can. Thank you again all for listening. You can check out our Instagram and our website, right, at Tshuva Center, T-S-H-U-V-A-H, Center, C-E-N-T-E-R, or tshuvacenter.org. We're on all the social media platforms. Thank you. Have a good weekend.